Next month, British rock singer and songwriter Brian Ferry begins a 30-city U.S. tour, his first in 5 years. Our rock critic Ken Tucker has described Ferry as an archly romantic songwriter who sings in a bored, aristocratic crooning style. Ferry founded the group Roxy Music in the early 70s. In the early years of the group, he was joined by Brian Eno, one of the first rock musicians to experiment with synthesizers and other forms of new technology. Roxy Music broke up in the early 80s. Ferry recently recorded his 7th solo album, Bête Noire. I spoke with him last December in New York after the record was released. Brian Ferry grew up in a coal mining town in northern England. He studied painting and ceramics at art school before moving to London in 1968.
After I graduated and moved to London, that's when I started to learn a bit of piano and I started writing my own songs, and then it started to feel as if I was really creating something, you know. And those songs became the first Roxy album.
Well, when you put together Roxy Music, you were, what, about 25 years old?
Mm-hmm.
That's actually pretty old for someone to put together
oh,
the
yes.
first band.
Yeah, right. So I think I had a lot of kind of music in me by then. So the first few years, I did a lot of records. It was all stored up, as it were.
What was the sound you had in your mind when you put together Roxy Music?
I don't know. It was to try and do something which didn't sound like what other people did. It was one of the... the ideas. I was influenced by so many different kinds of music, not only black American music, which was probably my main source of inspiration, but, you know, Indian music, Arab music, all kinds of ethnic things as well. And having been to art school, I'd been kind of familiar with art music, people like John Cage and Morton Feldman, this kind of thing. So it was kind of... we were interested in kind of experimental sounds. You know, we had a synthesizer, which was quite rare at that time. And so we used to treat the instruments to try and make them sound a little bit different and so on. And even the voice sometimes. So it was always an adventure. Each thing was... It was really exciting, you know, because we didn't feel there was anything else that sounded like that.
You were still basically an amateur when you put together Roxy Music.
I still am.
Well, did you feel like you operated on guts a lot of the time?
Oh, yeah, because we didn't feel particularly skilled, but the attitude was strong. And it was kind of, even though it was kind of arty music, as it were, it was very emotional. And we felt our hearts were in the right place.
You started performing in tuxedos and elegant jackets. Did that image for you come from movies or from other music groups?
It came out of desperation.
What do you mean?
Well, no, the first year or two, we kind of wore a pretty outlandish costume. We thought, well, let's make this a bit of a theatrical experience. So we would kind of... nobody was really doing that at that point, so we felt that was an interesting thing to do. And after a year or two of kind of, you know, the sort of rather strange costumes we wore, there was, it seemed a natural thing to do something a bit different and into suits and a more kind of anonymous look, you know. It seemed to be a strange juxtaposition of images or something. And it seemed to capture people's imagination, perhaps too much, in fact.
You mean because it drew attention away from the music itself?
Yeah, a little bit, yes. You know, you always have to be aware of that. Because sometimes an image, if it's too strong, can get out of hand.
One of the first records that you recorded was an album of pop and rock standards called These Foolish Things. And what you recorded on it ranged from Leslie Gore's It's My Party to Bob Dylan's It's a Hard Rain Gonna Fall and the standard These Foolish Things.
Yeah.
And you sang them with a lot of irony.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that irony was partly your attitude toward the songs, but also your attitude toward yourself, because you didn't think of yourself as fitting the image of the people who'd sing those songs.
Right, yes. It was after the second album. And it was great fun to do. We did it in about 3 weeks, which was very quick for me. And I particularly like the title track, These Foolish Things. I like to do songs from that period where perhaps you're dealing with a song rather than a great recording, you know, because that song's been done so many times that you never think of one specific recording of it.
The smile of Gobble and the scent of roses, the waiter's whistling as the last bar closes, the song that Crosby sings, these foolish things remind me of you.
What were the things that you felt that you lost and that you gained when Roxy Music broke up and you went your own way as a solo artist?
I think it's just that you get a bit tired of being tied to the same people as if by a piece of rope, you know, and you think, well, does it have to be like this for the rest of my career or whatever? And there are certain things that you miss from making group recordings, the kind of the shared responsibility, say, you miss a bit, and the kind of the mass hysteria and sort of enthusiasm that you get from working with, you know, other people who are sharing a project can be very strong.
One of the songs on your new record is called Kiss and Tell.
Oh, yeah.
And the opening of the lyric is 10 cents a dance, it's the only price to pay.
Oh, yeah.
Why give them more when it's only love for sale? Is that a bit of an homage to the songs 10 cents a dance and love for sale?
Oh, yeah, sure, absolutely. I like to make references to old songs sometimes. You know, I like songs from, like period songs, I suppose, from the period when they were well-crafted and written by songwriting teams sometimes, you know.
Earlier on, we established that when you started to perform and you were still really an amateur, you felt like you were performing a lot on guts.
Yeah.
And you imply that you still feel that way?
Well, I think you're always learning. I think it's a very healthy attitude to have. Nowadays, I kind of play with some of the best musicians in the world. I'm very lucky to know a lot of really good players, and I learn from them all the time, I think. Especially since the last two albums, say, or last three albums, were kind of difficult to make and took a long time. So I felt, and they were pretty complex, you know, because there are a lot of musicians on there, a lot of parts. They're quite complex. Hopefully, I can imagine the next album being a bit simpler than the things I've been doing. I feel I've kind of done what I'd set out to do a little bit, you know.
By simpler, you mean less highly produced?
Yes, maybe. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, just a kazoo and a pair of tap dancing shoes.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you very much.
Brian Ferry's latest album, Bete Noir, is on the Warner label. Ferry begins a 30-city U.S. tour August 3rd in New Haven, Connecticut.
10 cents a dance, it's the old price to pay. Kiss and tell.
This is Fresh Air.